Can more or less start, right? There is no tradition of waiting too long, is there? Before I forget, we move into another room tomorrow, which is E112. And this is Kaue Strasse 7. You will find it, hopefully. I also know that until the end of the semester on Wednesdays.
Okay. Can you change the room in Univers?
Yes, I can do it.
That would be great.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Back to hi. Back to the leftovers from the previous lecture. This is a short version of the substitution. What I proposed last time was correct until this place, I guess. So basically, these clauses are standard, and this one is more or less straightforward because we are trying to substitute x, and x was bound here. So the result of the substitution is the original term. And the tricky case is this one. Hopefully I wrote it down correctly. ZYTX, yes. So I mean the problem with this capture avoidance substitution is you need to rename the variable. So you first need to say what renaming is, but renaming is also a kind of substitution, but for a variable. So instead of doing it in two steps, introducing your name, introducing substitution on top of it, and just do it in one go. So, and I define this clause like this. So I repeat the substitution twice, but that substitution is defined in the previous clauses because the previous clauses, they completely specify substitution for variables. And here I only replace variables. Well, okay, here I replace the variable and here I replace this variable by a term, yeah. So basically the argument is that the term I apply the substitution is smaller than the original term modulo alpha equivalence. So hence this notion is well defined. So, but I hope you see why we needed these two substitutions, because if I just wanted to replace x by t and p, then t could contain occurrences of y, and I don't want to be them to be captured by this lambda. So I rename this y to z, and replace this lambda y by lambda z, and then I can substitute x by y because now I know that the term doesn't contain y. Example. So if you just take this definition and try to calculate something like this, so here's the situation, precisely the one of interest, because we replace y here by the application yx. And I don't want this y to be captured. No, I don't want this x to be captured. Right? Hence, I'm using this last clause to reduce it to lambda z. So I introduce a new variable z, and then I substitute. And then my result is lambda z y x z. Here?
No, at the top of the rules. Just
behind the rules.
Second from the top. So this.
Second rule. That should be y on the right hand side.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. Sorry. Thank you. Right. Then I had to get back to the reduction rules which I explained, and I need to correct myself. There's a quite substantial mistake which I made last time. So there was indeed this clause missing in one of the rules, as Thomas pointed out, I think, maybe someone else. And then I corrected it, and then I started correcting other things, but I hadn't had to do it because the rest was correct. And this set of rules is the one which was meant. And the problem why I started correcting them is because I was lost a bit and forgot that this is a one-step relation. So and this is quite important. So this kind of semantic, it's also called small step semantics. So you remember we are in this realm of operational semantics. And inside operational semantics, there are also different styles of operational semantics. So there's the like small step operational semantics, and there are big step operational semantics, and there are something in between. So, and this particular style is called small step operational semantics. Why? Because I specify this reduction relation for one step only. So I say my program reduces to some other program in one step. So this should be compared to alpha beta reduction, so to one step alpha beta reduction, not to this alpha beta reduction star. It's really just one step. So if I want to compare it to alpha beta reduction, that I need to add a star here and a star there. What I probably should have explained is what this means. This means PSO. Means not so for any Q there is no such transition, so it's in a normal form. And this is all well defined. I don't want to give an example now because I want to do an example with call by value, which I has given last time, which I recall now. And the example would be simpler. What I did mention and for call by value, for call by name and for call by value too. So for this practical semantics of evaluation strategy for practical purposes, we make basically two assumptions that we do not rewrite under lambda. So for example, this sort of thing. Would be convergent. So this omega omega term, which I introduced previously, the divergent one, if you guard it by lambda, then this is like a convergent term because we do not write under lambda. And the second thing is that that I didn't mention last time, but that's also an assumption which is made. We consider closed terms only. Well, this is because we are interested in the program, and program doesn't usually contain, I mean, we want to think of the terms as some programs, and programs are closed, so they do not have free variables. And then we can speak of converting to something concrete. If we had variables, we couldn't be able to say that the program produced something, because this something must be a concrete value. And then I recall these rules again for the call by name. They are much simpler. That the first rule and the second rule is like this. So, and it does what I explained last time. So the idea is we rewrite leftmost, outermost, just like for the standard evaluation order. And these rules, they tell us how to form such a transition. So if you want to form a transition, you look at the bottom, and then the top tell you which subterm of this term is being rewritten. So the top says, we rewrite P and leave the Q intact. And then to see how you rewrite this, you apply these rules again, etc., until you find a redux. I'm using the term redux, but maybe I should have told that redux is so redux as a reducible expression, so it's a subterm which we rewrite. And then I can give you an example. I mean, that's the basic, the important feature of call by value. Instead of calculating the argument and the function, we just calculate the function and apply it to the argument and then calculate the rest. We do not look at the argument. Small example. So what we have here, we've got an application, and here there is another application. And if I want to apply this strategy, I first reduce the topmost bit redux. I don't reduce it here, anything here, because here it could technically also reduce. But my strategy tells me, evaluation order tells me that I introduce here, rewrite the topmost redux. So I get lambda x Okay. And then I use the rules. I look in for what I'm rewriting. So here's an application. So I use this rule. And it tells me that what I'm rewriting is the left-hand side. So I match it with this P. But this is an application again. So I again match it with this rule. So the redux is this. And now this is a lambda xx. So I can use this rule. And hence I get lambda xx and lambda xx. And this is again, I can rewrite the topmost redux. So I get lambda xx, lambda xx. And finally, I get lambda xx. And this is the normal form. So let's, okay. Let me just contrast it with the call by value semantics. So call by value semantics is the one which is used in most of the programming languages, vast majority. And basically, we need a concept of value here. So the call by name didn't depend on the notion of a value. So notion of a value, it's something we convert to. So there was no premises like this. And call by value does depend on it. So we need to say what a value is. And in this particular case, a value is a term of form lambda xt.
No.
Du bist zu Monad-based Programming gekommen oder nicht?
Nö.
Nee, dann nicht. Yeah, so we are inside untyped lambda calculus where everything is simple. So a value is something we convert to, and in lambda calculus, there's just what we convert to is just terms of this form. And as you will see later, and if you change the language, you need to tell what is considered as a value. And values have more complex definitions. And the semantics is like this. Thank you. So there are three rules. Instead, of p is a value, I could say I could just write P is a normal form. So where this down arrow is defined like I did previously, but for this transition relation. So it means that we cannot have any transition from it. So it's technically equivalent, but I write a value because value is an important concept. It gives the name of this strategy. And as I said, the semantics, the style of semantic remains the same, but the concept of value remains for different languages. And you need to vary the notion of value too. So what is different here is, if we can rewrite the function, then we rewrite the function. And if we cannot rewrite the function, we rewrite the argument. And the beta reduction is applied only if the argument is a value. So it assigns a different priority to the evaluation. So it's no longer true that we first calculate the function and then apply it and don't calculate the value. We calculate the function, we calculate the value, and then we calculate the result. And under so the important thing to know is that call by value So we calculate properly fewer normal forms in comparison to call by name. Example, as the one we have seen before, it was this one, lambda x, lambda y, and what y, I guess, right? And then omega. So that was the term I showed you previously, that there's a strategy to calculate a normal form, because if you just apply the beta reduction to it, then you just left with this and the divergence disappears. And if you evaluate it using the call by value semantics, then you diverge, because the call by value semantics says evaluate the function and evaluate the argument, and when you evaluate the argument, you're screwed.
And what was a normal form again?
Normal form, so P is a normal form if you cannot find a transition. So I write if there is no Q such that call by value if you just apply these rules to this example, you would see that it doesn't converge. And I want to revisit this example now. So this was called by name, and this is called by value. And I've got lambda x, xx. Now what happens? Okay, why is that? Because of this rule, right? Because p is a value, it's irreducible, so we reduce the argument. So now this has 1, 2, 3 transition. This has 4 transitions. This is not an evidence, of course, but it gives you a slight impression why the people around the world use call-by-value semantics for their programming languages, because it's more efficient. I mean, in a bigger example from the experience, you find that for call-by-value, the call-by-value can be implemented much more efficiently. Although you do not find as many normal forms as you would find by call-by-value, but the answer is write your program in such a way that this doesn't happen. It's like Steve Jobs said about the answer the complaints how to hold the telephone. You still have the reception. Don't hold it like this. That's the answer from the call by value community. But again, so there are still languages which support call by value, call by name, and in Haskell we are almost like call by name. We just become more efficient because of sharing the radixes. So we get shorter transition reduction sequences because we optimize it, but we do not lose normal forms, and the payoff that we get is this effect of laziness, where you can use something which is potentially infinite, but you still can manipulate it. And this is what you completely do not have in languages like, just like normal imperative languages, Java and C++, etc. Okay. And as I said, this was big step semantics, and there's that was small step semantics, and there is also big step semantics. What does it mean? It means that we are moving away from the original start, which is for us lambda calculus, and which is related to the notion of reduction. And you reformulate the semantics differently, so you do not need the small step reduction at all. No, sorry, I wanted to start from call by name. So this is a different style where we our transition was relating a program and a next state of this program. And here, this is the relation between the program and the result. So that's why it's called big step. So for small steps, we just related program current state and next state. Here we relate the program with the final result. So, and here what I'm saying is that if my program was like this, then the result is itself, because this is a value. Or it's a normal form, it keeps referring to values, even though it's called by name and we don't need values. But it's a value anyway. And here, again, we evaluate, yes, this can be pronounced as evaluates to. So P evaluates to lambda P prime, and then P prime, in which X is substituted by Y, evaluates to C. Then the whole application evaluates to C. And basically to check what an expression evaluates to, you build a tree, and we just do it. No, I do it for call by value instead. This it will be shorter. And one can prove. So if we use the big step semantics and iterated and reached Q, which is a normal form, this happens if and only if P evaluates to Q. So this is the property, of course, which would be expected. And it tells us that this two styles of semantics are agree with each other. So for call by value, it's like this. So what happens here, this is just like usual. And then basically I can read it from bottom to top. If I want to evaluate a composition, I first evaluate the function, then I evaluate the argument, then I replace the corresponding normal forms. I mean the function and the argument by the corresponding normal forms I found, and then I reduce the result. And that's how I calculate what my composition evaluates to. And again, the same thing holds. So let me try to have an example. Hello. Just like before, we consider this term xx. So I want to evaluate it to the normal form. So I'm looking at the rules. So the rules which match is this one. So I need to evaluate this thing to something. Px So what's the normal form of this? It's the term itself. So I'm matching it with one of the rules, which is this one, and it doesn't have a premise, so I reach the top. Then the second thing is the argument. So the argument is lambda x x x lambda x x x. So okay, I want to evaluate this expression. I match it with this rule again because it's an application. Okay, maybe I just write the last clause. Ah, no, I cannot write the last clause because I don't know what my Q prime is. So here you have again lambda x x x called by value, and this is normal, and then lambda x x x so this is also normal, and then I substitute the normal one thing into the other. They are just the same. So I get lambda x x x hence here I also have lambda x x x. And finally, in this rule, the third component was missing, which was lambda x x x called by value lambda x x x. And this is again the end. So now I take the last term, and this is what... no, stop. Something went wrong. So I've added too many X's. So there's no X here. And this problem then repeats everywhere. Thank you. Yeah. Now it's correct. So it's like a proof calculus. If you want to show that a term reduces to something, then you need like to build a proof that it's true. All right. So this is hopefully clear. Then I wanted to say a few words about type lambda calculus. One other thing which is different when you compare this old school untyped lambda calculus with the modern programming languages is that we do use types because of many reasons, but theoretical and practical. But it's considered to be like a proven fact that in programming and design, that you can program much better if you use types. So for organization purpose and for thinking and designing properly. So one can modify lambda calculus from the untyped settings, like I presented before, to the type settings. And I call it simply type lambda calculus. And what we can include as types, some base types. Then we can include the unit type. And then we can include products of types. And then we can include exponentials. So this is what one usually considers as the type system for simply typed lambda calculus. It's quite simple. That's why it's called simply typed lambda calculus. So you can only form products of types, and of course you can form exponentials. And now basically you repeat the same story again, but you assign a type to every term. So you start from a variable, and then you form, when you form a pair of terms, then you assign the product type to them. If you form a lambda abstraction, then you assign the exponential type. And the first effect that you get out of it is this this term is no longer So this term is no longer typable. Let's just try to prove it. Actually, I didn't prove it previously. So suppose that X was a variable of type alpha. Then lambda x would be a term of type alpha to no wait. So x applied to x would have type beta, where alpha is equal to gamma to beta, and gamma equal to alpha. Because if you want to have a return type beta, then this x considered as a function must be of type gamma to beta, and this x considered as an argument must have type gamma. And since they both equal, because this is the same x, so you would have the equation alpha equal to alpha to beta. Come again?
Could alpha be some kind of infinite term?
No, because the terms which we define, I mean, alpha is a type, and type is something that we define by this grammar, and something that we define by this grammar is a finite term by definition. So if you want to solve this equation in this domain, there is no solution. That's a bit, I do it a bit by hand waving, because then I want to do it more formally, so I don't want to repeat, but I hope the argument is more or less clear. So we apply a thing to itself, and if we just try to type check it, it doesn't. And this shows that this sort of terms, they are banned from the type lambda calculus. And now recall that we encoded recursion in type lambda calculus using a very similar trick. So we modified this omega so that to express the fixed point combinator. And it's clear, more or less, that that also wouldn't work. And it doesn't work for fundamental reason, not just occasionally. It doesn't work in principle. So, meaning that we cannot encode recursion in untyped lambda calculus like we did it for the type lambda calculus. And formally, this can be captured by a theorem. So the this relation, this alpha beta reduction relation, is now strongly normalized, which means that we every term has a normal form, no matter which non-deterministic branch we choose. And this is an argument shown clear that there is no recursion there, because recursion if every recursion terminates, then it's not recursion. So now we infused more sense from the programming perspective to this calculus, but we lost the property that we can actually program complex things in it, because we cannot program without recursion. So, but this is fine. Once you choose the right basis, then you can modify it easily. So in typed lambda calculus, we didn't need to care about recursion because it was just inherent. And here we don't have it, so we just postulate it. What? What is limited?
Do we have a finite number of base types? Or
this doesn't actually matter. So it can be infinite or finite, but the point is when you form a lambda term, you can refer only to finitely many types. So it depends, yes, but it doesn't actually play a role. Right, so what one can do? One can plus epsilon. So epsilon y alpha. And y alpha is a recursion operator which just goes from alpha to alpha. So it's the operator which we defined previously for the untyped lambda calculus, but here we don't have it. So we just postulate it. So it's an operator which takes a function from alpha to alpha and calculates alpha, which is the fixed point of this function. So it's like we iterate, and if it finishes, then we get alpha, the result. So I could specify the typed lambda calculus with this operator, but I'm gonna do better. And I introduce a different calculus instead, which is a little bit richer, and it follows the same idea. So that we can introduce more structure. So if we can introduce fixed points already like this, why don't we introduce a couple of more important things like numbers? So I showed that the numbers could be also encoded in untyped lambda calculus, but it's makes more sense. It's more convenient to use numbers just as numbers. And like the branching operator. So I can just add this few things. It doesn't cost much, but it brings about a system which is a very close to something which you can actually use for programming. So, and the system is called P TCF. PCF, which stands for programming computable functions, and basically I describe it as follows. First, I describe what the types are, and the types are the same as for the simpler type lambda calculus. Plus bool and not. So we include a Boolean type and a type of natural numbers. Perhaps I remove the initial type. Let me keep this. This initial type is usually not used as a part of PCF, but it's nice to have for categorical models, which we'll just consider next. So let me just keep it and try. Hopefully, it will. I will not forget a rule for it or something. So this one type, the unit type, is just the type of one element. So it's sometimes useful if you want to say to write a function which doesn't return a result. So a function which returns a result is just a function which returns this this unit type. Okay, so let's just keep it. All right, then the concept that I need is so I need to construct the terms, and in order to construct the terms, I introduce a concept which is terms in context. So what is a term in context? So a term in context is a sequent. That name comes from Logix. So it's like a judgment saying that I have a term which returns type A and the context gamma, and this context specifies which three variables I have. That's a bit a technical trick, but it's quite convenient, and I just introduce it now for purposes which I will need later. So here A is a type and gamma is a context, and a context is a of pairs So a context is a non-repetitive list of pairs, a variable and a type. And the intuition is this, is that this term does depend on this variable. So I no longer, I can keep track of the variables which are free in this term, but maybe this comma would contain more variables. So well, let's say it's well defined. I mean, we are not going to have non-well-defined terms, but since I first introduced this construction, I need somehow distinguish the cases where this construction makes sense and when it's not. To this end, I am talking about well-defined ones, and these are precisely those which I can derive in a calculus for this sort of judgments. And the rules are like this. Let's try not to forget anything. So if X is in gamma, so if this judgment is in gamma, then this is a valid term. And I just proceed in this style. So if I have this is like an induction basics. So I want to, so this is the things which I defined, and these are just surroundings. So, and this is the simplest term, a variable. Then there is another simplest term, which is like this. So this star means a term which returns this type. So it's the only element of this type. Then there are truths and false. I will use this notation. And there is so for every natural number, this is again a term. That seems to be the induction basis. And so what's next? Next, I look at my types. So I've got product types. So if I have gamma TA and gamma SB, then I've got the product TS like this. And moreover, if I have T of type A times B, then I have got PR1 T of types A, of type A and PR2 of type B. So if I have a product type, then I can find the second projection. I can find the first projection. Maybe indeed one can use some names in this calculus. There is a strong connection to the logics here. I don't know if someone has a background in many of you have been to the Gloin course. So there was the propositional calculus, and rules came in pairs in. For every connectivity, there was an introduction rule and there was an elimination rule. Like if you want to form a conjunction, then there's an introduction rule for it. And if you want to eliminate the conjunction, then there's an elimination rule for it. So there's a strong connection to this style of term construction rules. So you can say, not all of them have this interpretation, but many do. So I could call this rule var intro, or maybe var e like this, and this will be star e, and this will be true e, and this will be false e. And this is NE. So these are all introduction rules because I introduced something. And this is again introduction rules for the pair E. And this is these are elimination rules. So pair elimination one, and this is pair elimination two, because in the top I had a product and I eliminated it, so there is no product anymore. Right, this is the most simple rules. Then there is a rule for lambda and for application. Okay, let's first consider application. So if we have a term S from A to B and a term T of type A, then apparently you can apply S to T. Like this. So I could call it app E, application introduction. So, and now obviously we need an application elimination rule. So what the application elimination rule? No, that's actually nonsense. There is no application elimination rule. Yeah, this is where it breaks down, at least at least in this style of reasoning. I mean, one can actually, yes, one can introduce the application elimination rule, but that's not conventional. So that can be a derived rule, but it's not a basic one. So instead, one has a rule for lambda abstraction, which looks like this. So if we have a context, now finally we can use the context in a meaningful way, because we just carried it around everywhere. And now we can write something like this. T of type B, and then lambda x. All right, so the idea is this was a term depending on x, and I bind this x in t, so this x disappears from the context now. It gets bound, and I remove it from the context now. So I can call it lambda introduction. Yeah, there were some rules which I've forgotten. I just write one rule in a general form like this. T1 A1 gamma TN AN. So this is just a common rule for the operations, because I don't want to enumerate them all, but you've got natural numbers, so there are sums of natural numbers, difference, multiplication, and a logical operation. All these kind of rules I just capture by this pattern. So if you have like two booleans, then you can form a conjunction of booleans, et cetera, yes. Yes.
Should the type of lambda x dot t be like A to B, not just B?
Yes. True, indeed. Thank you. Yeah. Perfect comment. And so one also often writes the types here. So. Like lambda x a point, I just skip it, like, because we know what the types of the variables are. But one often writes dot a to indicate that the a is a type of x. Yeah, sorry. Very good. Otherwise. It's clear so far, isn't it?
Hi, instruction again. There is this rotated T missing after the gamma.
T, which?
Bottom. Like you wrote gamma and then x of type A. Yeah. What's the exact semantics of that? And where's the A in a finite line?
I don't know, I didn't get it.
It's about the lambda introduction.
Lambda introduction.
So you wrote gamma, comma, x, colon, a.
Then
what is
okay.
Comma?
Then that comma means that x,
colon, it means it's a list. Yes, yes, it's a list, a comma separated list. So I just match it. So I'm saying there is a list which finishes with, like this. Does it answer your question? No, it's not included.
Okay.
So I take a list which finishes with XA and try to remove it. So now it's just gamma. Because you should think of it like the set of free variables, but it's ordered because it's a list. So we do not swap the variables. And it can also contain junk variables. So like the variables which your term doesn't depend on, but just some additional ones. And otherwise, it's like free variables. So when you bind x and t, then x shouldn't be in gamma anymore. Well, it doesn't. Well, I mean, when you start using it, it's actually quite important because when you consider a semantics of this, we are going to do it over a general category, and then you interpret this list as products, and products have priority. So A and A times B is not B and A. They are isomorphic, but they are not equal. So when you start doing anything with it, doing proofs, then you notice that it's better to keep the order and relate the similar things, but isomorphism, but not identify them. I mean, maybe it's not clear now, I'm just making reference to the future.
It's a
bit more complex, yeah, it's unusual, but when you get used to it...
it's okay, just question.
Yeah. Yes, because you can start it in the first place, one place only, at the induction basics. So when you form a variable, then you just start with some gamma which includes this x, and there are also all these clauses when you introduce a constant, then gamma is just arbitrary. So basically, in the very beginning, you're assuming what sort of variables you will need in the future, and you put them all in the gamma.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like in programming, you pre-declare your variables. This one? Well, let's call it somehow FE. So where F will be always will be ranging over all the operations, so like AND E, etc. Bottom right, this one? The bottom, B?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, F is just, this is a pattern. So if F is like a conjunction, then B is bool. So B is different depending on the on the function that you choose. So I mean instance of this rule. For example, I just do not want to write down a dozen of rules. So this is an instance of this. There's no, because B is associated with F. So F is the operation like conjunction. And I know that conjunction return bool. So B is bool because it's a return type of F.
So conceptually, I have a lookup table of operator.
It's more simple than this. I just was lazy to write down 10 rules. I wrote one rule instead. I mean, you should just read as 10 rules where F varies over all sensible things, which I just enumerated here. Maybe I've forgotten something. What I mean here is F is conjunction, disjunction, and then the instance of this rule, you always have different A, B, etc., depending on these operations. I just assuming that it's more or less understood. That's an example. And same for disjunction and for sum, you just have a natural, and natural as a result. Then we have so actually, this could also fit this form, but equality is like a particular thing. I want to compare two things and use this equation sign. But it's important to note that this A can be only a value type. So it's either bool or not or one. So because I don't want to compare two programs, it's... Thank you. And then, of course, there is if introduction. So gamma... So there's an if judgment. I can check if B is true and return either S or T.
Question about equality.
Yeah.
Can't I just also compare, for example, two pairs?
Yeah, you can. I probably should mention, should have mentioned it. It's like a derivable equality. So I could mention it here. I didn't because I postponed it because it's expressible in the language. So we will introduce a language, and there you could just encode it. Because if you compare to tuples, then you just compare to components. But you could include it here, yes. It just would make this rule a bit more complex because you would need to say what this type is. So it's a closure of not, bool, and one under tupling. And finally, if we have... S from A to 1, we have got, no, actually, no, this is not the way we do it. I do not have a premise. This is the fifth component, the fixed point operator, which is actually a constant. So it actually belongs to the induction basic. So I could mention it very, at the very top. You wanted to ask something?
Should the view and the type of the if B and
SLT not be a bool 2A? Where bool here? Or
bool 2A.
No. I check it here as a condition and I return. Ah, yes, you're right. That can actually happen. No, that it doesn't. So B is not a variable, it's a term which depends on a variable. So both this S and B may depend on the same variable, but they encapsulate it in gamma. So this B doesn't occur in the type of S. I think this is it. This is, I hope I didn't forget anything, otherwise I fix it next time, but it looks all right. Okay, anything else? Okay, thank you.